Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram weekend edition for Saturday, October 5th, 2024. Supreme Court to take up nuclear waste dispute. A dispute over nuclear waste being sent to the Permian Basin is headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Justices agreed Friday to review a ruling by the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. That found that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission exceeded its authority under federal law in granting a license to a private company to store spent nuclear fuel at a dump in West Texas for 40 years. The NRC granted the Texas license to Interim Storage Partners, LLC, for a facility that could take up to 5,000 metric tons of spent nuclear fuel rods from power plants and 231 million tons of other radioactive waste. The facility would be built next to an existing dump site in Andrews County that currently contains low-level waste such as protective clothing and other material that has been exposed to radioactivity. A second license to Holtec International for a similar temporary storage site in Lee County, New Mexico, was also vacated by the Fifth Circuit Court. Monica Perales, Secretary of the Permian Basin Coalition and attorney for Fasken Oil and Ranch, who has spearheaded opposition to the high-level nuclear waste brought to the area, reacted to the decision. Quote, for years, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and two private corporations have attempted to force Texas and New Mexico into accepting stockpiled radioactive waste. Despite overwhelming evidence to disqualify the proposed waste sites, resolutions and state bans, the NRC, Interim Storage Partners, and Holtec International continue pursuing their plan to consolidate quite possibly the most radioactive material on the planet, transport it cross-country by barge and rail for indefinite storage in a region called the Permian Basin, an agriculturally rich area that also happens to be the nation's biggest producer of oil and gas. Quote, the merits of our case are strong on two key fronts. First, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission lacks the authority to issue licenses for consolidated interim storage of spent nuclear fuel in a region hundreds and even thousands of miles away from the reactors that generated the waste. Second, judicial review is fundamental to our democracy, yet the Nuclear Regulatory Commission blocked the courthouse door by denying interested parties the right to intervene in the licensing process, which is unconstitutional. For these reasons, we expect to prevail, end quote. A decision is expected by the middle of next year. Sparks returns to legacy. Texas senator shares stories, talks education with high school students. Texas Senator Kevin Sparks returned to Legacy High School, his alma mater, to visit with students in the Student Council and in AP U.S. History on Friday morning. Quote, it's nostalgic being back at my high school, end quote, Sparks said. Quote, I enjoyed my high school years and it's fun being back and interacting with these kids. They just have so much energy and it's fun to see that, end quote. Sparks spoke to the students about his time as a student at the University of Texas at Austin and some of the challenges that he faced. Quote, it was really hard for me, end quote, Sparks told the students. Quote, I wasn't a great test taker and I was going through some hard times, end quote. Sparks added that the challenges helped him become stronger. Quote, you guys can do so much more than you think you can, end quote, Sparks said. Quote, several of my kids ran cross country, and one of the things I love about the sport is it helps you understand and gain the confidence that you're capable of so much more than you think you are, end quote. He compared challenges to a cross-country race, saying that even when you feel like you can't go much longer, you know you can do it. He added that after finishing the race, you know that you can challenge yourself to do it again. Students asked Sparks about what issues are facing the education system and what steps the state is taking to address those issues. Sparks said that he thinks the lack of discipline and structure in schools has made it difficult for teachers to do their job, and that sometimes legislature creates additional barriers for teachers. He added that they can take steps to address these issues by trying to make teaching attractive again to provide incentives for highly qualified teachers to stay in the education system. Quote, I'm a business guy, which happens to be in oil and gas, but I approach most things with a business perspective, end quote, Sparks said. Quote, supply and demand still work, so if you create a position that is highly sought after, you're going to have a lot of people seek those jobs that are willing to do things that helps them be qualified for those positions, end quote. Sparks said that education should help prepare students for their future. Quote, I see education as preparing our young people for a successful life, end quote, Sparks said. Quote, not just can you pass a test or do you know a lot of facts? While those are great tools, what we're really trying to do in education is prepare kids for a successful life, end quote. He added that it's important for students to know how to problem solve and how to take logical steps to achieve an outcome they're hoping for. Sparks said that speaking to students is important because they need to understand their civic duty. Quote, start asking questions and try to understand the most critical issues facing your community, your state, and your nation, end quote, Sparks said. Quote, this is challenging these days, but make sure you vetted the candidates, end quote. He advises young voters to understand what it means to participate in the election system. Quote, it's important to teach our young people to become healthy and productive citizens, end quote, Sparks said. Quote, they're going to be the next leaders of Texas, end quote. Elderly financial exploitation cases rise in Texas, APS reports. Financial exploitation of the elderly isn't often heard about, but according to Adult Protection Services, it's growing in prevalence. In fiscal year 2023, APS investigated 13,380 cases of financial exploitation. In Midland, Odessa, and San Angelo, that figure tallied 349. Quote, in our financial exploitation investigations, we are seeing some trends. Most cases can be attributed to cognitive decline, end quote, an APS spokesperson told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, when an elderly person is not aware of the totality of their finances, it makes them easy prey whether they've got a lot of money or just a modest Social Security income, end quote. APS, which is a program of the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, says it is seeing improper use of powers of attorney, improper transfers of property, and improper credit card access. More modern money transfer tools like Zelle and Cash App are also being misused. Quote, when we ask an APS client to review their bank records, often they are not even aware of these apps being linked to their accounts, end quote, the spokesperson said. Being taken advantage of financially by a trusted person can be difficult, especially by a relative. Quote, it's difficult working with someone who has been exploited by a family member, end quote. Marcy Leffler, APS Community Engagement Specialist, said in a press release, quote, there's a lot of denial. Their trust is what was exploited, end quote. During an investigation, APS staff will work with law enforcement and financial institutions to freeze accounts and stop the exploitation. Financial institutions take action. APS has met with financial institutions across the state and has presented at banking conferences to highlight the need to report and to work together to provide protections. The effort has paid off. Quote, we've seen an increase in reports from financial institutions, end quote, Associate Commissioner Kez World told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, they have vested interest in protecting their clients' assets. This is happening across the country and in Texas with brokerages, big banks, and local branches, end quote. Since the passage of the Protection of Vulnerable Adults from Financial Exploitation Act, APS has created specialized units that focus on exploitation in several districts around Texas. Quote, the bottom line is that financial exploitation of vulnerable adults is a societal concern and a growing one. But the good news is that through legislation, growing awareness, collaboration, and reporting, our communities are responding to the problem, end quote, World said. The warning signs. The warning signs of financial exploitation include sudden changes in bank accounts or banking practices, unexplained or unexpected withdrawal of large sums of money, adding names to someone's bank signature card, unfamiliar people accompanying bank customers to withdraw large sums, unauthorized withdrawal of funds using ATM cards or sudden transfers of accounts, of assets, sudden changes in financial documents, unpaid bills despite having enough money, previously uninvolved relatives who suddenly claim rights to a person's affairs and possessions, abuse of power of attorney. What to do? If you see signs of financial exploitation, call the Texas Abuse Hotline at 800-252-5400 or report online at txabusehotline.org. More information about APS is available at protecttexasadults.com. Middle East tensions drive biggest weekly oil price surge in a year. The rising threat of Iranian oil facilities being targeted amid the conflict between Israel and Iran-backed Hezbollah gave crude prices their biggest weekly gain in over a year. West Texas Intermediate jumped $6 on the New York Mercantile Exchange, rising 4 or 5 trading days. The biggest jump was Thursday, when prices climbed $3.61 per barrel. Prices rose 67 cents Friday to end the week at $74.38, up from $68.18 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed at $70.86, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures fell 3 of 5 trading days on the NYMEX, ending the week with a loss. Futures opened the trading week with a 2-cent jump and neared $3 per MCF Thursday, rising 8.4 cents. But prices fell 11.6 cents Friday to end at $2.854 per MCF, down from $2.904 at last Friday's close. Quote, oil prices are always subject to multiple phenomena and can fluctuate quickly and be volatile at times, end quote. Economist Ray Perryman told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, there has been a recent upswing. Primarily because the market has homed in on the recent escalation of tensions in the Middle East, which could potentially lead to interruptions in shipping or destruction from some Iranian production capacity. We can expect traders to be laser-focused on this situation with every new development affecting prices, end quote. Beyond that, he continued, quote, lower interest rates in the U.S. and elsewhere, and generally positive economic news, will likely increase demand modestly. I would expect prices to remain around the recent trading range of $65 to $80 per barrel, unless the risk in the Middle East escalates still further, end quote.
Features from the Bible. Truth in Scripture. Jehoshaphat appoints judges. 2 Chronicles 19. When Jehoshaphat returned from the battle of Ramoth-Gilead, where Ahab, king of Israel, was killed, Jehu the seer challenged him for his alliance with Ahab and told him that because of this alliance, the wrath of the Lord was upon him. Jehu told him that there was some good in him, for he had rid the land of the Asherah poles and had set his heart on seeking God. Jehoshaphat went among the people and turned them back to the Lord, the God of their fathers. He appointed judges in the land, in each of the fortified cities of Judah. He reminded them to consider carefully what they did, because they were not judging for man, but for the Lord, who was with them whenever they gave a verdict. He instructed them to let the fear of the Lord be upon them and to judge carefully, for with the Lord our God there is no injustice or partiality or bribery. In Jerusalem, Jehoshaphat appointed Levites, priests, and heads of Israelite families to administer the law of the Lord and to settle disputes, and ordered them to serve faithfully and wholeheartedly in the fear of the Lord. Late in his reign, Jehoshaphat made an alliance with Ahaziah, king of Israel and son of Ahab, who was guilty of wickedness. He agreed to construct a fleet of trading ships at Ezion-Geber. Eliezer prophesied against Jehoshaphat, telling him because he had made an alliance with Ahaziah, the Lord would destroy what he had made. The ships were wrecked and were never able to set sail.
Life Tributes, Ronald Ron Gene Van Meter, 11/21/1941 to 9/28/2024. Ronald Ron Gene Van Meter passed away peacefully on Saturday, September 28, 2024, at the age of 82. On November 21, 1941, Ron was born to parents Lorene and William Bill Van Meter in Okmulgee, Oklahoma. Ron was preceded in death by his parents, grandparents, and sisters, Shirley Graham and Mary Beth Witherspoon. Ron is survived by his wife, Diana Van Meter, daughter Sherry Parvino Mock of Montgomery, Texas, daughter Shelley Patterson of Midland, Texas, son Miguel Galley of Gladwin, Michigan, daughter Leah Cunningham Cobb of San Angelo, Texas, son Sean Van Meter of Midland, Texas, son B.J. Van Meter of Midland, Texas, and son Nicholas Van Meter of Midland, Texas, as well as their extended families. He was blessed with numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A celebration of Ron's life will be held at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel at 11 o'clock a.m. Monday, October 7, 2024. A lunch gathering will follow next door at the branch. Interment will be at Ellis Rest Haven Cemetery, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland at 3 o'clock p.m. In lieu of flowers, the family asked donations to be made to San Angelo Support for Veterans, Inc., care of First Financial Bank, Lori Davis, P.O. Box 5291, San Angelo, Texas, 76902-5291. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Johnny Morgan. Johnny Morgan, 66, of Midland, passed away October 2, 2024. Memorial service will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. Saturday, October 19, 2024, at the branch at NPW. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Oil Report. Matterhorn Express Pipeline begins operations. The much-anticipated Matterhorn Express officially began flowing gas on October 1st as it moves natural gas from the Waha Hub in Reeves County to Katy outside of Houston. Quote, we saw flows around a combined 320 million cubic feet per day on new interconnects to Enbridge's Texas Eastern Transmission System and Williams Transcontinental Gas Pipeline in southeastern Texas, end quote. Ian Hemming with East Daily Analytics told the Reporter Telegram. He said Natural Gas Pipeline of America has added a Matterhorn receipt point near Katy, but has not yet flowed any gas. Quote, we're expecting flows to ramp consistently in the coming months as Matterhorn continues coming online, end quote, Hemming said. East Daily already has seen Matterhorn impact natural gas prices. Hemming wrote that prices at the Waha Hub have jumped sizably, from in the teens to over 60 cents at midweek. He predicted Waha prices would continue to increase as Matterhorn deliveries ramp up over the next few weeks. Operated by Whitewater Midstream, the new 42-inch pipeline runs about 580 miles from the Waha Hub in West Texas to Katy. Permian gas prices have frequently traded negative since August as egress pipes filled and Kinder Morgan conducted extended maintenance work on the El Paso system. East Daily expects oil and gas supply growth to pick up in the Permian following the start of Matterhorn. Permian gas production is on pace to grow 1.6 billion cubic feet per day in 2024, and oil production to grow 150,000 barrels per day to 6.25 million barrels a day by the end of the year, according to the company's latest supply forecasts. Natural gas liquids production is also expected to grow, though East Daily analysts see some trade-offs for ethane. Leading Permian producers such as Chevron, ExxonMobil, Matador Resources, and Vital Energy also have guided to production growth into the fourth quarter, supporting East Daly's outlook. Axis and Brigade merge to form largest U.S. well servicing company. Two well servicing companies have announced a combination that will create the nation's largest well servicing company. Axis Energy Services and Brigade Energy Services will merge into a new organization named Access Energy Services, headquartered in Dallas. The new entity will have over 1,700 employees, over 200 active and marketable workover rigs, and a support equipment operation that includes 50 cement pump trucks, 26 wireline trucks, 15 snubbing units, nearly 200 pumps, and a fleet of blowout preventers and pipe handlers. Quote, "This makes us the largest service company in the U.S., end quote, Ryan Phillips, Access Chief Executive Officer, told the Reporter Telegram. Quote, "There's a need for that amid exploration and production consolidation. These major E&P companies want to align themselves with major service companies. We align nicely with the majors," end quote. Phillips said he expects the headcount for the new organization will grow through the remainder of this year and into next year. Access has six different facilities in the Permian Basin, stretching from Hobbs, New Mexico, east to Snyder, Big Lake, Andrews, Kermit, and three locations in Odessa. Phillips said the company gained its Snyder location in the merger, expanding its ability to serve the Midland Basin and Delaware Basin, while Hobbs lets it serve the northern Delaware. He said the company's business is evenly split, a third completions, a third production, and a third plugging and abandonment, which he said is growing. On the completion side, he said the company is running more rigs than ever, even though the rig count and frac fleet counts are down. Quote, "Everything is becoming more efficient," end quote, he commented. Quote, "The trend continues for efficiency," end quote. In his experience, Phillips said fewer drilling rigs still means more footage drilled as E&P companies decides the best return for their investments is reworking a well that has been offline and placing it back on production. Aligning with the major producers has helped with recruitment and retention because employees believe that gives them greater job security, he said. Access is active in the nation's major oil fields, the Haynesville, Eagle Ford, Utica/Marcellus, Bakken, and broader Rockies, but Phillips estimates the Permian comprises over 40% of the company's total footprint. Just before the merger, Access had successfully rolled out its fully electric well service rig. The EPIC, electric-powered intervention and completion, rig is currently working on wells operated by Occidental. U.S. energy sector sees job growth. However, gender disparity persists. As the U.S. energy services sector continues its recovery from the pandemic, the Energy Workforce and Technology Council undertook a detailed study of the current state of employment. The association has just released its 2024 workforce report, developed in collaboration with Accenture. Key findings from the report indicate a gradual workforce recovery within the U.S. energy services sector, with early 2023 seeing steady job growth, followed by a period of stabilization. Notably, the top six energy-producing states account for 495,685, or 76% of jobs in the sector, with Texas taking a significant lead at 317,199 positions, followed by Louisiana, Oklahoma, Colorado, New Mexico, and California. While women's participation has slightly increased since 2021, significant gender disparity persists, with women representing only 21% of the workforce. Ethnic diversity has also risen, with minorities now making up 38% of the workforce, primarily driven by Hispanic employees. Molly Dieterman, president of the council, sees progress even as those disparities remain. Quote, "Women make up 21% of the workforce, a slight increase from 19% in 2021. However, when you look at technical or operating roles, the numbers drop to just 13%. At the top leadership level, women hold 20% or less of these positions, but in technical leadership, they hold less than 1%. That's an area for our companies to really focus their efforts," end quote, she told the Reporter Telegram. She added, quote, "There's been progress for ethnic minorities as well. Representation has risen to 38%, up from 36% in 2021. However, at the leadership level, it's still an area of concentration for us as race/ethnic minorities hold 17% or less of top leadership roles. And that number has actually decreased since 2021. So while we're seeing some improvements, especially at the broader workforce level, the gaps in leadership and technical roles are where you really see the more significant gaps," end quote. Asked what steps companies should take to address these disparities,
She said companies should first expand their recruitment strategies to attract more diverse candidates, particularly for technical roles. Implementing strong mentorship and sponsorship programs can help underrepresented populations advance in their careers, she added. Quote, in addition, companies can review their promotion processes and address any biases that might exist. Creating a more inclusive culture is key, one that truly values diverse perspectives and experiences. Offering flexible work arrangements and family-friendly policies is another way to make the energy services sector more accessible, especially for those people balancing family responsibilities, end quote, she wrote. Dieterman also listed partnerships with educational institutions to encourage underrepresented populations to pursue STEM careers in energy. Quote, telling our story matters, and we can do so by showcasing successful individuals in the industry to provide visible role models. Employee resource groups are also a great tool for identifying qualified talent for advancement opportunities. And targeted leadership programs can help underrepresented groups move into higher roles, she wrote. She described her outlook for the services workforce returning to pre-pandemic levels as, quote, cautiously optimistic, end quote. She noted the energy services sector has shown steady job growth in 2023, which is a positive sign. Right now, in 2024, the workforce is at about 629,435 employees, following BLS's recent correction, which indicates a slow but steady recovery. Looking forward, she said the industry is focused on improving operational efficiencies and embracing digitalization. Recruitment and development of skilled talent are going to be key areas, especially as the sector continues to adapt to evolving global energy demands. Quote, while things are improving, full recovery and growth will likely depend on factors like market stability and how well the industry can attract and retain talent. This last part, our talent, is especially crucial for navigating the future challenges and opportunities ahead, end quote, she wrote. The types of jobs covered in this report include positions like field engineers, machinists, welders, equipment technicians, logistics coordinators, safety inspectors, support functions, and much more. They represent the diverse range of occupations within the OFS sector, reflecting the sector's critical role in the broader energy industry. The employment data is crucial for understanding trends in the industry and the overall health of the energy workforce, according to the council. Milestone Carbon's Delaware Basin Carbon Hub advances with EPA permit progress. Milestone Carbon, a business unit of Milestone Environmental Services, has moved a step closer to realizing its plans for a carbon hub in the Delaware Basin. The company announced this week its Class 5 carbon dioxide injection, CO2, well permit application for that carbon hub has been deemed administratively complete by the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA. Additionally, a monitoring, reporting, and verification MRV plan, which is required for permanent geologic storage of CO2, has been filed for the same hub with the EPA. The Class 6 permit comprises two wells, each with a capacity of up to 1 million metric tons of CO2 per year, with potential to expand to four wells. According to the EPA, a final decision for the Class 5 permit is estimated to be made in September 2026. Quote, we are very encouraged by the response from the EPA, end quote, said Chris Davis, senior vice president at Milestone Carbon. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram, Davis said he knows the state of Texas is seeking a primacy designation from the EPA to permit Class 5 carbon injection wells, which would be overseen by the Railroad Commission if granted. Should that designation be received, he said he believed the Railroad Commission would be prepared to move more quickly on applications than the EPA. He said the company acted early on applying for the permits, knowing they would take time. He said the company sees a need for its carbon hub, given the number of natural gas processing plants in the Delaware Basin, and expectations of more plants being built as operators seek to move their natural gas to market. Another potential opportunity could arrive with the construction of additional gas-fired power generation plants in the area, as state officials seek to encourage development of new plants. Davis said the hub is designed to capture emissions from power plants, and Milestone is working with power plant developers interested in the Permian Basin. Quote, we want power generator developers to think about carbon capture from the beginning, end quote, he said. Davis added that the application now shows up on the EPA's online tracker, giving power plant developers the opportunity to see where there are plans for Class 5 injection wells. Asked about public concerns over the safety of carbon capture and storage, Davis said there needs to be significant education on the subject. He pointed out that there are concerns for different reasons, from CO2 pipelines to well leaks, and Milestone tries to address each concern directly and individually. Quote, there are thousands of CO2 injection wells. The Permian Basin, Texas, and the U.S. has experience in this field. Everyone has risks. We're seeing regulations concentrated on CO2, water injection, and waste disposal. Outside of the nuclear industry, it's hard to imagine a more regulated waste than oil field waste, end quote. Milestone Carbon's Delaware Basin Carbon Hub was first announced in October 2023 and today includes the leasing of more than 30,000 acres of land and pore space for the permanent geologic storage of CO2. The Carbon Hub will aid natural gas processing, electricity generation, and other critical industries as they transition to lower carbon operations. Tailwater Capital expands Permian Basin presence with new acquisition. Already in possession of expansive exposure in the Permian Basin, Tailwater Capital has grown even further with the acquisition of a significant off-market, non-operated working interest asset package from Accelerate Resources Operating. The acquired assets include more than 5,000 net leasehold acres in the core of the Midland and Delaware Basins. The assets are predominantly held by production and are currently producing more than 5,000 net barrels of oil equivalent per day. They also possess meaningful future inventory under premier operators, including ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, Diamondback Energy, EOG Resources, Mewbourne Oil Company, Apache Occidental Petroleum, Devon, and Coterra Energy. Quote, we have a wide swath of investments, end quote, said Doug Prieto, chief executive officer of Tailwater E&P, the upstream platform for Tailwater Capital. He listed holdings in water midstream, mineral and royalty investments covering 28,000 gross acres, and a soon-to-be-announced investment in a natural gas midstream operator. We believe the Permian Basin is the growth engine of U.S. oil and gas, and we want to be part of that, end quote, he told the Reporter Telegram. Prieto, a native Midlander, said he was especially excited to be working with professionals he's grown up with, known most of his life and most of his professional career. The company's Tailwater will be working with are best-in-class, capital-efficient, and expert at proving up zones, he said. Those zones being proved up include the Avalon, First Bone Spring, Harkey Sand, and Wolfcamp C and D benches, and, quote, notably the Barnett and Woodford, end quote, according to Prieto. As operators continue to identify new drilling targets and optimize production, Prieto said his company anticipates additional upside potential in this already prolific asset base. The company strategically hedged a significant portion of the acquisition's production profile alongside the execution of the purchase and sale agreement, helping to mitigate market risk and solidify the return profile. He said he sees his company's role as supporting the operators developing those resources, helping provide solutions such as access to capital or midstream capacity. Quote, we have a full technical team at Tailwater E&P, a team with operator background, so we offer expertise as well as capital, end quote, Prieto said. He said the company sees opportunity in the minerals and royalty market, estimated at $700 billion. Quote, we're seeing some institutionalization of the market with large companies buying, end quote, Prieto said. Quote, there are significant opportunities buying minerals in parts of the Permian Basin, end quote. The flight of capital from the industry and into ESG, environmental, social, and governance initiatives also create opportunities for Tailwater and the industry long term, he said. With upstream capital intensity growing and operators drill longer and longer laterals, he said that creates value for mineral owners that's greater than in the past. Quote, it creates the opportunity to sell minerals and have a life-changing impact, end quote, he said. Community, from migrant farming to healthcare management. As a child, Rosie Luna traveled extensively throughout the United States, not for pleasure, but because her parents were migrant farm workers. Summers were spent traveling by car to North Carolina and Indiana with her parents and four siblings to harvest fruit and vegetables. She was born in Eagle Pass, but her family soon moved to Dade City, Florida, to take advantage of the opportunities that the Florida climate provided for migrant farmers. Quote, in migrant farm families, the entire family works, including the children, when school isn't in session, end quote, Luna explained. Quote, of course, it's hard work, but at the time, I didn't know any other life. Even though we were poor and my parents worked long hours, I had a happy childhood. In fact, that life gave me a strong work ethic that was modeled after watching my parents work in the fields, end quote. In 1993, during her senior year in high school, the family moved to Midland to take advantage of oil field job opportunities. And in May 1994, she graduated from Midland High School. The following fall, she started taking classes at Midland College and eventually graduated with an Associate of Applied Science degree in nursing. Quote, I always enjoyed healthcare, and I knew that getting an education was a means to a better life, end quote, she said. Quote, as a nursing student, I realized that my talents and skills were more aligned with the administrative and management side of healthcare. In fact, I've never really worked as a nurse, but the knowledge I learned in nursing school has helped me immensely in my administrative career, end quote. After graduating from Midland College, Luna worked for a few years as a case manager at a rehabilitation facility, and then for the past 18 years, she has served as executive director of West Texas Physicians Alliance, a professional association that handles credentialing and contracting for over 130 physicians. As such, she performs the credentialing slash recredentialing process on behalf of Alliance members and secures and oversees contracts with managed care entities. Quote, I wanted to continue my education, but life happened, end quote, she said. Quote, after marriage, the birth of two daughters, and then eventually divorce, it was difficult to find the time and financial resources to go back to school to work on a bachelor's degree, end quote. In the fall of 2021, Luna noticed an article in the Reporter-Telegram about Midland College's two bachelor's degree programs in organizational management and health services management. Quote, it was always in the back of my mind that I would go back to school, and then when I came across that article and read about the degrees, I thought that's exactly what I need, end quote, Luna said. Quote, I had no idea that Midland College offered bachelor's degrees. My daughters were older and didn't need me as much, and I was ready for a new challenge. I also had tremendous encouragement from the man who I would eventually marry, Brian Stefanilla. It's important for students to have a support system, and Brian was cheering me on every step of the way. So in January 2022, Luna began taking classes in Midland College's online Health Services Management Bachelor's Degree program. Quote, it was a little daunting at first, end quote, she said. Quote, I hadn't been to school in over 20 years. There was also the matter of making sure that I could afford it. However, Midland College staff quickly told me about scholarship opportunities. Thanks to donor-directed scholarships that Midland College offers, cost was not a factor. The scholarship assistance made going back to school affordable. I tell everyone who is thinking about going to college to not let finances deter you. Midland College has lots of ways to help. Quote, I've been working in healthcare administration for a long time, so I wasn't sure there was much I could learn that I didn't already know. However, I was very impressed with how up-to-date the health services management program is with current trends. Everything was very timely, and I was able to incorporate some of the class material into my job. Since I had never worked in a hospital, I also appreciated learning things that pertain to hospital administration, end quote. Luna said that being able to take all courses online appealed to her because of her job and family responsibilities. However, there was one class that she found struggling. Quote, algebra was tough for me, especially online, end quote, she said. Quote, in fact, after about 2 weeks of the class, I started to doubt myself and wondered if I had any business going back to school at this stage in my life. Fortunately, I contacted the instructor, Anansa Green, and she was so understanding. She said that she also taught the class in a traditional face-to-face session and invited me to take the class that way instead. So I did, but I still struggled. It had been a really long time since I took an algebra class. Ms. Green was still very sympathetic, and she worked with me to drop the class and enroll in a statistics course the next semester, again in a traditional face-to-face method. Statistics made much more sense to me, and another great professor, Joseph Severino, taught me the course. Quote, all of my professors at Midland College were terrific. They just don't pay lip service to student success. They really help students reach their goals. MC has a special place in my heart, end quote. Luna was inspired by her professors, and they in turn took notice of Luna's commitment. Dr. Leonora Lambert, Midland College Department Chair of Health Information, was particularly impressed with Luna's final project, which was developing a commercial for teaching elderly patients and their family members about self-advocacy and various insurance-related issues. This past May, Luna graduated from Midland College with a Bachelor of Applied Science degree in Health Services Management. And on June 6th, she and Brian were married. In the future, she plans to pursue a master's degree in health care administration.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, October 3rd, 2024. Jeff Davis Court settles architect selection question for community center, by Janine Bishop for the Big Bend Sentinel. Fort Davis. Following a special Monday afternoon session, Jeff Davis County Commissioners are no closer to selecting a contractor for renovations to the former retail store purchased by the county to serve as a community center and evacuation shelter. They were able to settle item one, approving the request for proposal, RFP, process used to name Rotenberry Wellen Architects of Midland as the architect for the community center project. County Grantsman Larry Francell reminded the court that architects fall under the category of professional services, therefore not requiring an RFP process. Rotenberry Wellen was named the county's architect of record for the renovation of the county clerk's office several years ago, and they have since performed that role on several projects. Commissioner John Davis made the motion to accept Rotenberry Wellen as the architect for the community center project. Commissioner Jody Adams seconded the motion, and Commissioner Royce Laskowski was the lone opposing vote. Agenda item 2 was an effort to approve a contractor for the work and allow County Judge Curtis Evans to sign a contract once the required environmental review for the project has been completed. A lively discussion on the action included interjections from several citizens in attendance, as well as Francell and County Attorney Glenn Eisen, as to the advisability of contractor selection at this time, particularly under the terms of the pending HUD HUD federal grant for the project. As they addressed the subject, commissioners did resolve one issue that had been carrying over for several meetings when they opened the contractor's sealed bids. Only two bids were received, and commissioners revealed the names of the contractors but not the amounts of their bids. Bidders were Aztec Contractors from El Paso and Six Roses Construction, LLC, which has addresses listed in both Fort Davis and Sierra Blanca. After opening the packets, Davis made a motion to table the agenda item until a future date, with Commissioner Roy Hurley providing a second. The motion passed with affirmative votes from all commissioners but Laskowski, who appeared to have not voted. Following the meeting, Judges Clerk Sandra Chambers said the project's environmental review was progressing, and communications from the HUD Review Authority indicated that the process is basic, focused primarily on the potential presence of endangered wildlife or significant archaeological materials on the site. Photo by Sarah Loftus. National Park Service employees Steve Cape, Jeff Leininger, and Rick Gupman helped clear a mammoth tire from the Rio Grande at Santa Elena Canyon in Big Bend National Park as part of a cleanup for National Public Lands Day. Kelly Perez named interim city manager by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa City Council passed a resolution last week appointing Kelly Perez as the interim city manager for the city of Marfa. Mandy Roan resigned from the city's top administrative role, which she held for over 4 years, 2 weeks ago. Perez has been serving as the city secretary under Roan since August 2021. Mayor Manny Baeza told the Big Bend Sentinel that the city will also open up the job to outside candidates. The city will accept job applicants for the city manager position until 3 p.m. Thursday, November 7th. The job posting can be found on the city's website and in this week's paper. Interested applicants are encouraged to submit a letter of interest, resume, or CV, and references via email addressed to mayor@cityofmarfa.com or via mail addressed to Mayor Manuel V. Baeza, Post Office Box 787, Marfa, Texas, 79843. Baeza said the City Council will discuss the city manager position at their regular meeting, currently scheduled for November 12th. The city secretary job will not be posted until a later date, pending the city manager decision. Baeza said he is looking forward to continuing to work with Perez and is confident that she is up to the job transition. "I have faith that Kelly will keep us going in the right direction," Baeza said. Mrs. Roan has brought her up to date with the upcoming projects. "Kelly has a very strong work ethic. She has taken on additional roles in the city and has excelled. The city is in a good position going forward." In addition to regular city secretary duties, Perez, prompted by council members, also oversaw a revamp of the city's hotel occupancy tax collections and short-term rental permitting, resulting in consistent enforcement of both new and existing laws. Perez said she is sad to see Roan, who she worked with closely for 3 years, go, but is honored to be stepping up in her absence and eager to show council members that she is capable of succeeding in the role. "Filling her shoes is going to be a huge feat, but I'm willing to take on the challenge," Perez said. "I'm excited for the opportunity to expand my governmental knowledge, grow with the city, and serve the community, even if only for an interim amount of time."
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.